Good day, and welcome to the Teneo Insights call. Today's conference is being recorded. At this time, I would like to turn the conference over to Mr. Kevin Kajiwara. Please go ahead, sir.
Thank you, Shelby. Good day, everyone, and welcome to our Teneo Insights call on coronavirus. Also welcome to day two of Teneo's global work from home policy. So we're struggling just like the rest of you. This is our third call now on coronavirus in the last month or so. The first two, you will recall, if you were on them, were really meant to help familiarize people with the disease, with the epidemiology of it, and how governments and companies were preparing to meet the challenge. Well, obviously, now we are fully in it. So today we have assembled a team, really more than anything, to answer your questions. We're going to start with some initial comments. I want to talk a bit about what we are seeing and what we are helping people work through on the business continuity and corporate policy front, and also on the communications and investor relations front, which I know is of critical importance as things move quickly. And to start off talking about politics and government policy response in various jurisdictions as well. But then we're going to open it to questions after a very short introduction, and we can discuss any of those issues further. But we also have colleagues on the line who I'll introduce in due course, who can help you on the corporate governance front, as well as on the science and the public health responses as well. I want to start on the politics and policy front, and to help me do so is my co-president of the political risk advisory business, Wolf Pickley. He heads our research effort and really specializes in Europe. But obviously, after a historic day in the markets yesterday, markets are looking a little bit more mixed today, particularly in Europe, and U.S. equity futures have advanced. Earlier, they were limit up. This all followed significant Fed action over the weekend and other central bank action, particularly ECB action that has met with some mixed reviews. Essentially, everyone is awaiting for government to step up and meet those central bank and monetary policy efforts with concerted fiscal action. What we have seen thus far, of course, has not been particularly coordinated either between countries or within. We can see how governors and mayors here in the U.S. Have differentiated their responses. Finally, however, yesterday, Monday, we saw some cooler heads prevail at the White House. There's been a significant change of tone. The president has admitted that the situation is bad, spoke openly of the risk of recession, and also spoke openly about the effects of this lasting deep into summer, which I think probably tells you everything you need to know about how government response is likely to start playing out. Now, right now, we're in the middle of the process of getting the recently passed House bill through the Senate and to the president's desk. Now that the FISA court issue has also been taken care of in the Senate, it looks like this will get through. Nobody wants to get held up in Washington much longer. So our team sees this essentially done within the next 48 hours or so. But that's really the easy part. The hard part and the real politics are going to come in on the stimulus piece of all of this. Now, we've seen from Senator Schumer and the Senate Democrats coming up with a $750 billion package. Not a whole lot of detail in that. It certainly did touch on airlines as an example. But then Secretary Mnuchin, that he met with Senate Republicans, going to unveil a plan on Thursday to the tune of about $850 billion. Now, the president teased all that out somewhat yesterday as well. The significant line coming out of him, of course, is that he was 100% with the airlines. No detail on that, but that is clearly going to be the number one part of the stimulus to watch for. But the hard part then is going to be getting House Democrats on board. I think that the political storm is really getting teed up here. House Democrats are going to want assurances that stimulus aid is going to American families, to healthcare workers and professionals, and that corporate subsidies are seen as secondary. This also raises the question, if the president is right and this is going to continue well into deep summer, raises the question of how many stimulus packages are going to be out there on the horizon, how far to go. All of this, of course, in the context of an election year where every House member is also up for election. Senior citizens who are a big voting bloc are concerned. It's going to be a very, very tricky politics here. We will also be looking at other items beyond just dollar stimulus, other things. Senator Grassley mentioning the rollback of China tariffs, potentially working with other countries in terms of sort of stimulus trade, if you will. And clearly, you know, we're also seeing differentiated action, unilateral action being taken by governors and mayors. You know, through our partners in Washington, we can certainly help you on that front as well. But those are the issues we're watching most carefully right now in the U.S. in terms of the fiscal policy response. But Wolf, the epicenter of the outbreak right now is clearly in Europe. Perhaps you can give us an update, because we've seen in the European Union a whole lot of Europe, but not a lot of union in terms of the responses of recent days. Where are we?
Thank you, Kevin. Good morning, good afternoon, everybody. Well, the EU leaders are actually having a video call today. They're going to announce the most dramatic measure so far, unprecedented measure, actually. They're going to introduce a 30-day travel ban for foreign visitors within the Schengen area, which basically entails around 31 countries. The suspension will be for 30 days to start with, but there is no term limit to that at this point. This is by far the boldest collective measure taken by the European leaders to try to deal with the crisis. Most of the countries at this point, they are in national lockdown. The only exception so far is the UK and, to a certain extent, the Netherlands. All the others, they have emergency measures in place with significant restrictions in terms of travel, in terms of personal movement, and so on. That is in terms of the immediate crisis management. On the economic front, what we have seen is a variety of countries announcing measures, like Italy, a package of $25 billion. France and Spain are actually announcing them later today. Germany as well has announced measure last week. The problem here is these measures have been not coordinated and not of the scale to impress the market. What is basically missing here is what the media talks about as a big bazooka. The problem is the big bazooka so far is simply not appeared, and in our view is not going to appear anytime soon, because the focus of the European leaders at this point is to basically tackle the immediate crisis, potentially introduce some bridging measure to try to minimize the impact of these national lockdowns. But we are not at the stage where they are looking at the kind of further in the horizon in terms of stimulating the economy. We are not there. And the country that we would suggest to keep an eye on here that could potentially be the trigger and convince European leaders to do something more is Italy. The Italian yield on the 10-year bond has doubled since last week. We are now at 2.4 this morning. If I take you back to the peak of the Eurozone crisis, Italy was there was a sense that Italy was going to lose market access when the yield was at around 7%. So 2.4 is a significant step up since last week, but certainly nothing close to what we have seen at the peak of the Eurozone crisis. So there isn't that sense of urgency for the European leaders to move quickly anytime soon on a coordinated and credible fiscal package there. My final point here is that this crisis, if we look a bit beyond the immediate term, will have a significant impact on European politics. It will significantly change the priorities of the government. I think potentially the biggest victim will be the Green Agenda, the Green Deal that was announced by the European Commission. I think it will be very difficult to push ahead with that in the middle of a recession and when the priorities are elsewhere. We don't see necessarily populist parties benefiting a lot from this crisis. Actually, what is interesting to see is that lots of the sovereign claim of these parties are losing appeal. And also what we have seen, interesting enough, is a return to call the expert. You know, populists, usually they were fighting against the expert. Famously, Michael Gove in the UK argued that the expert time was over. Well, now the experts are back in fashion. So certainly a change of landscape in Europe, or the political landscape, is coming, but it's not going to be necessarily in a negative direction for business. And let me stop it there. Thank you.
Thanks, Wolf. I want to move on now to China very quickly, because, you know, for all of the early mistakes that were made in China, the reality of it is that now there are more confirmed cases outside of China than there have been inside of China, and they are starting to take their economy out of the depths of the hit. And I think this is particularly instructive when we look at what's happening, say, in the United States and in Europe, as just described by Wolf, that you have these ad hoc policy responses, shutting down critical elements of the economy and shutting down consumer spending. You know, it's in the midst of all of that chaos, it's actually much easier to shut down an economy than it is to coordinate the relaunch of one. And so, you know, we're seeing a relaunch of activity in China. The question is, are those numbers real? And I think for the most part, our view is that they generally are. Chinese economic activity is currently operating at about 70% of normal activity. Now, the monthly economic indicators for January and February combined, you know, released on Monday, were obviously very bad. March is going to show some improvement, but here are the things to watch. 24 of mainland China's 31 province-level regions have downgraded their state of emergency level from level one, which was the highest state of emergency. Anecdotally, we're seeing other signs of reopening. Apple has opened 38 of its 42 stores. Starbucks has indicated that 90% of its stores have reopened. Luxury brands like Hermes, 39 of 43 stores reopened. Now, the government figures are probably exaggerated somewhat. You know, companies report on a yes-no kind of basis to local governments regarding their business resumption. So they may be reporting yes, even if they're still short-staffed. And I think that it's also true that labor and supply shortages do remain significant. And many workers that are returning to big cities from their home villages are still subject to 14-day quarantine. But big data is less subject to government manipulation here. And on other indicators like coal consumption, electricity consumption, property transactions, traffic congestion, the light intensity that we see from satellite photos and the like suggests that that economic activity continues to pick up apace. And anecdotally, street life and retail life in places like Beijing and Shanghai are reviving. While traffic isn't at normal levels just yet, you can see week on week that it is that the traffic increase is noticeable. Also, it would be difficult to conceal if hospitals were overloaded and overwhelmed. Social media and foreign journalists are on the lookout for that, and we're not really seeing it at this point. Also, the two of the emergency hospitals that were very quickly erected in Wuhan, those have now been taken down. So the other question here then for I think Western companies is some of the lessons that are being learned by companies getting restarted. You know, we're seeing that that health checks and protective equipment for employees are being required by local governments as a condition of reopening. Idled employees are being retasked to new activities. So restaurant, hotels and movie theaters reallocated their employees to online to offline delivery services and the like. We've seen sales shift from offline to online. We've seen non-medical manufacturers shifting to producing more medical supplies, liquor companies, as an example, starting to produce hand sanitizer and the like. So there's some creative there are some creative opportunities that are emerging in China. But a lot of the questions that we are fielding and a lot of the help that we are giving to clients at this time are really based on business continuity, security, protection for their staff, and so on. And to help us think through the latest on this front, I want to turn to two of my colleagues, Courtney Adante. She is the president of Teneo's security risk advisory business that's chaired by former New York Police Commissioner Bill Bratton. She supports our clients with issues of resilience and business continuity via enterprise security strategy programs, including emergency preparedness and response and crisis communications. And she is joined by Jonathan Wackrow. He's our global head of security. In addition to that, he advises clients on issues relating to crisis preparedness, planning, management, and response. He's a regular law enforcement analyst on CNN, and he's a former Secret Service officer on the Presidential Protection Detail. So, Courtney and John, let me hand it over to you, maybe you can fill us in on what you're working on right now.
Sure. Thanks, Kevin. So, you know, I think as we've all noted, and you all have certainly alluded to, we've seen just an unbelievable shift and unprecedented escalation in both corporate and government response measures to this outbreak, particularly over the last couple of weeks. And, you know, just want to share, you know, how we've been addressing it. Our teams have been working with clients to prepare for successive stages of outbreaks, from what I call a day one or no impact situation to community infection, to company infection, to a mass outbreak scenario, which requires partial or full shutdown of operations or a full-scale work-from-home operation scenario. And, you know, just as recently as last Monday, our interactions with clients were largely focused on their concerns if someone in the community where the company operates is diagnosed positive with the virus, or whether they may have to close a single store or a location if an employee or customer tested positive. And fast forward now to this morning, almost everywhere we look across industry sectors, company operations have jumped from a day one response to what we would have planned for with a mass outbreak, and, you know, largely fueled by government recommendations and mandates to close local businesses, impose curfews, impose a shelter in place, as with the Bay Area, you know, or largely driven by corporate decisions to protect the best interests of people and close all their offices. And even, you know, since Friday, offices in Midtown Manhattan where we work and surrounding our building were mostly empty. And yesterday, as you know, a lot of the folks on the call at Teneo who stopped into the office to pick things up, Park Avenue was just an utter ghost town. You know, and companies that have a largely hourly workforce requiring that people show up on site for work to run the business, they've really had to make some hard decisions, and they're still going through that process. And for those that are able to continue to run their business with a largely remote workforce, we expect to see a whole new set of operational challenges and scenarios to plan for. And, you know, as we've been talking with clients and thinking through that, you know, we're talking about managing the transition from office work to working exclusively inside the home and all that entails, to dealing with things like employee burnout and feelings of isolation and helping them through that and keeping productivity levels up while keeping morale up across the board. And for all of us, this is brand new, fresh. There's no definitive signs yet to tell us when infection will peak and level off, particularly here in the U.S. and in Europe as we watch the numbers and we, you know, we watch the science and read the reports. So we're asking people to have patience, focus on the work, try to maintain some semblance of normalcy, find a new routine, and lean on their friends and family and colleagues right now. And really, still major unknown for all of us is what happens and when will we get the all clear to reemerge from our homes and apartments and go back to normal life, whether that means working in a store, studio, a manufacturing facility, a restaurant, or, you know, an office complex. How will that happen and how do we recover? So this is top of mind for us and our clients, and we've discussed this at length internally. And, you know, these questions are the foundation for what I think is the very, very next set of tactical and strategic scenario planning and just general plans for businesses as soon as we complete this transition into our new remote operating model. And yes, I think a lot of companies, Teneo is an example, and probably a lot of businesses represented on this call have made the initial transition. This might be, you know, week two or this might be day two, but there's still now we have to see how this plays out over the longer term. But no matter what, it's our view that this environment really represents a significant leadership opportunity for companies to potentially redefine employee communications, employee strategy, and ultimately business operations. And I think we will learn so much from all of the choices and decisions that we will make as employees and employers as we kind of push through all of this and figure it out. And, you know, frankly, the unknown makes it both exciting, but in some ways a bit terrifying. So, you know, my colleague John Wackrow is on the phone, and, you know, you and I have been side by side in the trenches on this stuff for the last few weeks. So I'd love for you to share some of your thoughts.
Absolutely.
Thank you, Courtney. You know, and just to reinforce a couple of things that Courtney was saying, you know, the dramatic shift in unprecedented escalation in both the federal and state response to the outbreak has caused many organizations actually to scramble to align their business operations to what has become really within the last 72 hours the new normal. Due to the initial slow rise of COVID-19 cases within the United States over the past couple months, many companies that we have been engaged with and have observed took a wait-and-see approach to crisis planning, just because dealing with a health crisis and now a global pandemic was outside of their typical crisis management plans. Those same companies are now quickly trying to enact policies to respond to government intervention that has caused significant impact to their operations. Unfortunately, the threat of the virus itself and the uncertainty and anxiety that is coupled with it has led some corporate leaders to make short-sighted decisions. This is just further exacerbating the already confusing corporate response. As many on this call have and will continue to advise, corporations must take pause and understand the long-term risk that this crisis has on their organization and develop phased-in strategies in alignment with their business operations. Today, most companies are impacted to some degree, and unfortunately, all the experts agree that things are going to get worse before they get better. We are working with organizations to help address issues with their workforce and develop near-term and long-term action steps to address disparity between salaried workers and hourly workers, and how to maintain an elevated focus on the employees who are continuing to work, whether it's in the service industries or manufacturing positions, and most importantly, how to keep them safe if they're remaining operational. These actions are coupled with strategies focused on how to maintain productivity and efficiencies during a long sustained work from home or reduced workforce environment. While many organizations are just entering this response phase of the global crisis, at Teneo, we are starting to work with clients on the recovery phase. The rapid closure and transfer of operations caused by this crisis, seen by many organizations, poses a unique recovery challenge in terms of communication and resuming increased operations inevitably. As Courtney stated, organizations faced many uncertainties in a recovery period, and the road to a steady state of operations will require a significant corporate leadership to navigate organizations back to a regular order. Kevin, back to you.
Great. Thank you, Courtney and John. And as I said at the outset of the call, you know, really what we want to do is have our people available to you and your questions. So please, in a moment, I'm going to ask the operator to open the floor to questions and ask what you want. But while you prepare for that, I want to, you know, everything that Courtney and John have just talked about and the lightning speed with which an unprecedented situation is unfolded is going to challenge every organization in terms of how they conduct their communications, both externally and internally, as well as with their institutional investor base. To that end, I wanted to bring in a colleague of mine, Steve Cohen. Steve is a senior managing director with the strategy and communications arm of Teneo. He focuses on comprehensive reputation, corporate communications, positioning, and investor relations programs for many of our clients. And so, Steve, this is an evolving evolving challenge for companies. How are you? How are they meeting it? And how are you advising that they do so?
Thanks, Kevin, and good morning, everybody. You know, as companies, you know, manage through this shift and figure out how to stay operational, how to keep their employees engaged. In other words, companies are communicating directly with their customers in a way they never have before, sending emails to their databases, explaining how they're operating, how they're treating employees, and at least in the short term. Similarly, companies we're talking to are communicating aggressively with their employees in general. It's our view that over-communication is the order of the day, especially with employees, but also with customers. We'll come to investors a little bit later in the conversation. But I think there's a real interest in our brands and in our companies in knowing how management's thinking about this issue and what it means for them and their obligations. A survey that our research group conducted last week indicated that clear communications and understanding the company's plans are the most important issue for employees, with more than two-thirds of respondents ranking it first. 70% of those who responded in our survey say that ultimately the responsibility of being prepared and taking care of communications and employees rests with the CEO. More than half of the employees that we spoke to believe their company is keeping pace with peer company, but there remains a view almost universally that there's more the companies and leadership should be doing to communicate and to ensure that companies are prepared to manage through this uncertainty, which is clearly unprecedented. Turning quickly to investors before we get to your questions, we all know that equity markets and fixed income markets, for that matter, have been whipsawed, swinging wildly over the course of the last few weeks as investors attempt to flee to safety, but have a hard time finding a safe haven. While it's clear that the actual performance impacts on many companies will be substantial and even catastrophic, most companies we're talking to believe it's too early to dimension exactly what that impact will be. While some companies have withdrawn guidance, the majority that we've looked at and have advised have refrained from doing so at this point, as they look for clarity on duration and severity. That said, this is a moving target, remaining engaged with investors and analysts is important, doing so largely in theme-driven and giving updates on operations and supply chains. We're seeing a lot of clients and working with a lot of clients on doing some virtual investor meetings, virtual roadshows, and starting at least a conversation with the investor base. Earlier in the call, Kevin, Courtney, and John all mentioned the challenges of restarting an economy, and we expect that as we move through this process and companies try to get their operations back online, it'll take a new level of engagement, encouragement, and communication to bring customers back to outlets, to bring investors back into equities, and to bring employees back to work. As this disruption wanes on, focus will shift to how companies are engaging with their communities and the world at large, deploying their resources, whether they be human capital, financial commitments, or other capabilities, to aid populations in managing through the pandemic crisis and the recovery. Some of these commitments are already beginning to take shape. It's super early days. One that stood out for its creativity, and they've gotten a lot of good attention for it, is LVMH's conversion of its perfume production and packaging to produce and distribute hand sanitizer around the world. We'll no doubt see more of this, and I think all sets of stakeholders, investors, employees, customers, and the like will expect this. So something else we're talking actively to clients about. Kevin.
Okay, thanks a lot, Steve. And so now we're going to open it up to questions. Myself, Wolf, Courtney, John, Steve are all positioned to expand on anything we've discussed so far. I would like to also introduce my other colleagues who are joining us for this portion of the call. First is Martha Carter. She is a vice chairman of Teneo and the head of our governance advisory. She focuses on shareholder engagement, activism, defense, executive compensation, and other matters of governance and best practice, particularly for the boards. She was formerly the head of global research at ISS. Orson Porter is also on the line. He's a senior managing director and the head of Teneo's Washington office and really heads up our government affairs practice. He was the former director of government and public affairs for Nike, and before that served at the White House as a special assistant to President Clinton. And many of you who have joined our previous two calls will be familiar with Dr. Jerry Hauer. He's a senior advisor and he's a leading expert in emergency response and management and crisis planning. He was the Commissioner of Homeland Security and Emergency Services for New York and the Director of the Office of Counterterrorism and the Acting Assistant Secretary of Health and Human Services, the Office of Public Health Emergency Preparedness. So they're all here to field your questions on this fast-moving issue. Shelby, can you please instruct everyone how to get into the queue and tee up the first question?
Thank you. If you would like to ask a question, please signal by pressing star 1 on your telephone keypad. If you are using a speakerphone, please make sure your mute function is turned off to allow your signal to reach our equipment. Again, press star 1 to ask a question. We'll pause for just a few moments to allow everyone an opportunity to signal for questions. And we have no questions in the queue at this time.
Okay, maybe everybody is very shy here this morning. So while you're thinking of it or keying in, maybe I can tee it up here a little bit. And Jerry, maybe I can go to you because Courtney sort of posed really the big question, and I know you don't necessarily have an outright answer to this, but maybe you can get to it in a roundabout way, which is, you know, where do you think we are? And by we, I'm talking about the United States right now, in this, in how this virus and outbreak unfolds, and in terms of our public policy response, how have things changed in terms of the characteristics of the outbreak? What are your thoughts at this point?
Well, thanks, Kevin. Unfortunately, we're behind the curve here in the United States. We are seeing a rapid increase in the number of cases. I think that increase will continue. And as this upswing, and again, we're at the lower end of the upswing on the curve, I think that the projection at this point in time, the evolution of this virus from the outbreak could wind up being over several months, and this could wind up going into May, June, July. The whole goal at this point in time is to reduce the impact on the most vulnerable populations. By reducing the impact on the most vulnerable populations, we'll reduce the impact on the healthcare setting. There are two structures to do that. One is mitigation, which focuses on slowing, but not necessarily stopping the spread of the epidemic, the spread of the virus. The other strategy is suppression, which is geared at reversing the growth of the epidemic. At this point in time, we are now seeing governors and mayors being very aggressive at doing both mitigation and suppression. As you know, yesterday, Governor Cuomo asked for federal assistance because the projections in New York State, which I think will evolve in other states, is that the healthcare system sometime in the next few weeks, and we're already starting to see it, will be overwhelmed, both in the number of regular beds, but particularly in the number of intensive care beds. And we could see significant overflow in the number of cases requiring intensive care.
Great. Thank you. Shelby, how do we look on the questions front?
We do have one question from Ian Rubin.
Ian, please go ahead.
Ian, your line is live. Please ask your question.
Hi, guys. Hi, sorry about that. I was on mute. Thank you all for having this series of calls. I think they've been very helpful. I guess my question is, we've all seen the flatten the curve images, which for me personally were very helpful in understanding how social distancing can help, suppress progression through the community. What is, and I guess this is a little bit down the road, but let's say we all continue our work from home for, 5-6 months, whatever it is, I don't know. But what is the end game for that? How do you all go back to work without then having a steep curve, albeit it will probably be less high? Are there thoughts on that? Staged coming back to work and, continuing of society. Thank you.
Sure. There are several components to that. One is that at this point in time, probably on the order of 60% of the people in the country will be expected to have been exposed to the virus. There is good evidence that once you're exposed and have developed antibodies, the likelihood of you getting sick from the same strain of the virus after exposure is very low. So in essence, a good part of the state population will continue to be immunized, so to speak. So as that occurs, there will be less in the way of cases. The problem is, as the virus spreads throughout the population, it will impact a greater number of the most vulnerable. So we'll see that spike in the number of serious cases and the number of deaths. So the goal with social distancing, shutting down universities, isolating people who are sick at home, and quarantining the household members of those exposed will hopefully start to flatten this curve and allow us over time, and the period could be 4, 5, or 6 months, but once we see things start to flatten, there is the potential to start opening components of the population. That's something that will have to be done on a case-by-case basis. It can't be done countrywide. It's going to have to be looked at city by city to see whether we're seeing a reduction, whether we're seeing a flattening, to better understand these micro-epidemics around the country and the ability to try and reopen things as the micro-epidemics start to level out or start to decrease. And again, that could take 4, 5 months until we get there.
Courtney and John, you both mentioned working with clients in terms of thinking out there in terms of the restart. Anything you want to add to what Jerry just said?
This is Courtney. I think what I would say is just this all plays into the, you know, let's get ourselves, you know, transitioned into this remote work scenario. But we have to start thinking about, you know, the different scenarios and planning that will take place in order, like I was saying, for us to reemerge from home and go back to the office. And I think Jerry makes a really good point. I think, you know, as part of scenario planning, we will need to be thinking about the staging of being able to come fully back online again. And while right now, the second I don't have the answer, I think, you know, we will have to plan for, you know, is this 2 months out? Is it 4 months out? Is it 6 months out? And what if my business is told, you know, in terms of the staging, you need to, you're going to have to wait, or, you know, can I plan for a full reopen and a, you know, full ability to come back online based on an analysis of these micro epidemics across the country? And so, you know, as we get a little bit more intel from the science, I think that will help inform businesses figure out what do the various scenarios look like over time. And then in order for me to go fully operational again, particularly if, you know, I sent people home and there's certain work that they can continue to do from home, I have production or manufacturing or things like that I've either had to halt completely, you know, what does that look like? So those are some of my thoughts just in Jerry's comments.
I would just say we should we will be watching very carefully how South Korea and China come out of this. You know, we didn't pay close enough, we as a country did not pay close enough attention to them going into this crisis. You know, we need to watch very carefully how they come out, because there will be lessons learned and cautionary tales and successes alike. Shelby, let's move on to the next question, please.
We'll take our next question from Noel Cohane.
Yes, good morning, everybody. I'm Noel Cohane, based in Brussels, and I'm just wondering if any of the experts would comment on whether the poorly coordinated response within Europe and then across the Atlantic will lead to kind of second waves of infection, and that basically none of us can recover until the last.
Jerry, you're probably best positioned to answer that.
Yeah. So you're asking if the response in Europe will lead to a second wave. At this point in time, what we're seeing is rapid growth throughout Europe. So we don't know at this point in time whether there'll be a second wave. We know that in Italy, Spain, France, they are still on the upslope. So we're hoping that as they continue to grow, that we will see some of this immunization in the population due to spread. Whether or not there's a second wave, we can't tell at this point. As Kevin said, it will be very interesting to watch China, South Korea reemerge or come out of the epidemic. And as they reopen businesses, factories, whether or not we see a spike in the number of cases again, as social distancing is reduced and people start coming into contact with one another.
Great. Thanks, Jerry. Next question, Shelby.
We'll take our next question from David Pillsbury.
Thanks again, everyone. This is Dave Pillsbury from Club Corp. Appreciate you having these calls. I know no one on the call has a crystal ball, but as you all know, there's a shelter-in-place provision in place in six counties in the San Francisco Bay Area. How do you all handicap a national quarantine at this point? Just would like to get your point of view on the probability of that happening in the near future.
Gary?
Yeah, sure. I think at some point here we will see the president tell people to shelter in place. It is something that is difficult to enforce, but if people do social distancing, shelter in place, closing universities, closing schools, it will have an impact in reducing the spread of the epidemic. So I do believe there will be some more dramatic pronouncements by the White House. Orson may be able to answer that as well.
Yeah, Orson, anything else you're hearing?
The only thing I would add is probably the major player that that people aren't talking about are the governors and mayors who are making all of these announcements about closing of public facilities, restaurants, et cetera, et cetera. So I would add that, you know, look to the governor, look to the local officials to kind of take a leading voice in that. D.C. may be secondary. The president's announcement definitely will be important, but as you've seen over the course of the last 24 hours, you see a lot of the governors kind of partnering together in, you know, a tri-state area on the East Coast to make, you know, overall decisions that not only impact, since, you know, a lot of these communities are interconnected, that not only impact their states, but impact their neighboring states. So look for governors to increasingly play a more important role.
Yeah, good point. Thank you. Sorry, go ahead, Jerry.
Dave, let me answer your question from last week, because I was able to get a clearer answer. People don't really become positive for the virus on testing until about a day before they become symptomatic.
Okay. Shelby, next question.
Again, to ask a question, please press star 1. We'll take our next question from Hollis Stone.
Go ahead, please.
Hollis, your line is live. Please ask your question.
Hi, this is Holly Stone. I had a question. We have some manufacturing capabilities, and I'm trying to determine if there's anything that we can do to support the cause. You guys mentioned the perfume company that was able to make hand sanitizer. I was wondering if there's any sort of a clearinghouse where we can go look to see what's most needed.
Steve, Courtney, or John, anything on that front, or Jerry?
You know, it's Steve. I haven't seen any clearinghouse or aggregation of needs on a global basis. I think communities are starting to do it, but we can look into that a little bit more and come back to you. If you want to send a note forward, we can work with you on that.
Great. Thanks very much.
Shelby?
And we have no more questions in the queue at this time.
Okay, let me ask a couple of others then, just as in the remaining time we've got left, because, you know, Steve talked quite a bit about corporate communications evolving and investor relations specifically. Martha, I want to ask you, shareholder meetings are always a big event to be planned for. And I think we and you in particular are getting a lot of questions on virtual meetings, companies concerned about that their proxy advisors and the investors themselves don't really like them. But what are you seeing and what are you advising on that front right now?
Yeah, thanks, Kevin. We're getting a lot of questions. There's a lot going on the governance front. And I know that we haven't had time on this call to cover everything, but happy to answer any questions if you send us some notes. We've been getting in questions on everything from ESG to executive compensation during the market downturn to pre-IPO and deals, activism, how boards handle this, and so on. But the topic of the day, as Kevin mentioned, is virtual meetings, considering the time of the year that we're in. We have seen some companies already go to virtual meetings, either have had them. Starbucks, for example, opted 2 weeks before their meeting to do that and filed with the SEC to indicate that in a notice out to participants. We've seen some companies announce them, and certainly a lot of companies are thinking about it. Because we're early in proxy season, this hasn't all played out yet, and we're working on a client bulletin to send out with additional information, because there's a lot in this space, more than we have time to talk about today. But the capability to do it has been in place a long time. Broadridge has been facilitating the online technology to do this for years. The SEC just put out guidance last week. The real line in the sand for a company is whether or not you're pre-proxy filing or post-proxy filing. And as Steve mentioned in his remarks, communication is the order of the day, and that's certainly going to be true here. The governance groups, Council of Institutional Investors, and the proxy advisors have indicated that going to virtual shareholder meetings is certainly reasonable, but they'll be looking for a whole lot of things, including the ability for shareholders to have a two-way dialogue and to not be disenfranchised. If you're a company, I just want to say one more thing, which is you want to make sure you focus on the SEC's recent guidance, which will indicate in the bulletin we'll be sending out this week, as well as your own governing documents. And also state law is important. Delaware allows virtual meetings, but not all states are as friendly. So you want to make sure you're taking a look at that as well. Happy to answer any additional questions as you have them about this or any of the other governance areas as we make our way through this. Thanks, Kev.
I guess one inevitable follow-up question to that, Martha, and probably it's too early to say as we're just kind of embarking on this, but if these work well for both sides, both the companies and investors, presumably the cost is going to be a lot lower than putting on actual meetings, do you think that should be could this be the future then?
Yeah, the new normal. I think that's great. Sure, and it's not too early to start taking a look at that. In fact, ISS has already indicated that while they don't have a policy on virtual meetings, they will be taking a look at company responses to it and how these meetings play out this year to determine what their policy might be for next year. So with the appropriate communication, and the SEC has said that's ensuring that there's communication out to all market participants, and the ability to have that two-way dialogue so that shareholders can ask questions, shareholder proponents can present their proposal, all of those things, that there could indeed be a softening on the stance going forward into 2021. So it's the communication around this is going to be very important.
Great. Thank you. Shelby, any other questions?
No, sir. There are no questions in the queue at this time.
Okay, one final question for me, and then we'll wrap this up, and it's for you, Orson. We got a question from some colleagues of ours in Hong Kong. regarding the election, not so much your opining on the outcome of what the election will be, but I think purely with regards to the logistics. We've already seen some states push now their primaries, but what are the logistical risks to the election process and the conventions for that matter?
I think, you know, the number one risk is people being genuinely disinterested and not exercising their right to vote. What you will see is a continual rollout of states postponing. I think Kentucky just announced during this call that they were doing the same. It wouldn't surprise me that Wisconsin does it in the next two or three weeks, Pennsylvania, and then ultimately Florida. What you will see is states exploring the success of mail-in ballots, as you've seen in states like Oregon. That model will prevail. I think on the debate, not having audience was well received. It may become a national model. And then the conventions, I think one thing that President Trump said yesterday that a lot of people didn't talk about was if this thing does roll into August, then you're looking at potentially the postponing of the Democratic convention in Milwaukee in July or completely moving it out and the Republican convention being in August. And, you know, there's a high probability if no one's able to travel and corporate sponsors aren't able to get there, that the conventions won't make a whole lot of sense. So, you know, look for everything to go virtual, look for a lot of mail-in ballots and look for states until we get through this to make probably the right decision and postpone their elections or primaries.
Well, great. Thank you very much, Orson. And I want to thank everybody. I know that the situation is evolving very quickly. We're all adjusting to a new reality, work reality, home reality, and that your time is precious. So we appreciate your taking the time to join us today. If you have a new question or didn't get to ask your question, please don't hesitate to send us an email, contact either your Teneo representative or send us an email at teneoinsights@teneo.com. We will no doubt be having additional conference calls and adjust our personnel on the calls as the subject or as the situation warrants. So please be on the lookout for additional announcements on this front. And please don't hesitate to let us know how we can help. We're all standing by. Thank you very much and have a great day. And thank you to Courtney and to John and Wolf and Steve and Jerry and Martha and Orson. Appreciate all of your insights today.
This concludes today's call. Thank you for your participation. You may now disconnect.